Thank you, Kurt, for subbing for me last Sunday. I think he kind of likes when I'm sick last minute. Could show off he could preach shorter than me. And thanks for those subbing for me right now as a parent. Appreciate that. Can you sing the words of that invitation song wholeheartedly? Do you have any reluctance in not just saying the words, but meaning, I love thy kingdom, Lord. The house of thine abode, the church our blessed Redeemer saved with his own precious blood. I love thy church, O God. Her walls before thee stand, dear as the apple of thine eye engraven on thy hand. Do you have any hesitancy in voicing that? I love your kingdom. I love your church. I kept thinking of this psalm as I worked on Psalm 122, and there's a couple others in these Psalms of Ascents that I had a bit of a break from. But Psalm 120 through 134 are titled, in these ancient titles, as the Psalms of Ascents. And I think the idea is that these were pilgrim songs, songs of the Israelites as they made their way to Jerusalem, perhaps for their feast days. And so there's themes about going back to Jerusalem, and some of those themes we've talked about. And this one in Psalm 122 focuses on just the sheer joy and love that they have for God's people, God's kingdom, God's temple, and the city of God, Jerusalem. So let's read Psalm 122 and ask that same question. Can you voice this wholeheartedly as well? A Song of Ascents of David, verse 1. I was glad when they said to me, let us go to the house of the Lord. Our feet have been standing within your gates, O Jerusalem. Jerusalem built as a city that is bound firmly together, to which the tribes go up, the tribes of the Lord, as was decreed for Israel, to give thanks to the name of the Lord. Their thrones for judgment were set, the thrones of the house of David. Pray for the peace of Jerusalem. May they be secure who love you, peace within your walls and security within your towers. For my brothers and companions' sake, I will say, peace be within you. For the sake of the house of the Lord our God, I will seek your good. I'm going to be making application throughout the lesson to our sense of appreciation and joy and zeal for God's church. And I know we're talking about the Old Testament, and we have our minds in this literal city of Jerusalem and this literal building of temple that gave them the sense of God's dwelling with them. But the application is pretty direct for us. There's multiple scriptures in the New Testament that talk about, and in the Old Testament as well, that talk about God's people as comprising the city of God wherever they are, and comprising the temple of God wherever they are. Ephesians 4 is one of them. We'll bring some others up as we go. But God's people are God's chosen city, God's temple. And so these Psalms of Ascents that celebrate people coming together to worship the Lord are for us to celebrate people coming together to worship the Lord. It's dangerous to get into little petty squabbles and quibbles with words, but I will quibble with a quibble with words. Sometimes someone will say, we're going to church tomorrow. And someone else will say, well, that's not what you say. Now, smart aleck kids, you know, you can talk about this with your parents, but don't just use me as evidence to disagree with them. But, you know, we're going to church. Well, don't say that. And it might be that the way they're using it isn't quite helpful, so that's why I don't argue with your parents. But going to church on Sunday isn't that exactly what we're doing? And the point is made, well, it's not the building. The church isn't the building. The church is the people. Exactly. I mean, I was really thinking of this beautiful building we have. I was thinking of the people when I said I'm going to church. Now, I suppose if it's you're signed up for cleaning the building and it's some random Tuesday night, and you're like, well, we're going to church. I guess that's when you have the quibble, right? I guess where two or three are gathered. Well, we are going to the assembly. And so there is pretty direct application to the limited sense of our gathering, because we have a local gathering of God's people that gives us a taste, a reminder of the universal gathering of God's people, both across the globe and across time, that we look forward to at the end to be with all God's people. And so there's a picture and a taste of that greater gathering. So think about, as I talk about a love for the kingdom and a love for the city of God and the temple, think about local assemblies, your local congregation, and just think about the Christians you know, and think about your longing for God's people across space and time. So I'm getting that out of the way now. So if I say going to church, hopefully you know what I mean now when I say that. So Psalm 122 is celebrating that for us. I always like to, it seems like a typical way for me to do things is to talk about the problem first. Why we even need this. Why it is a point to be made that we need to be taught by Scripture to celebrate gathering with God's people to worship the Lord. And there's kind of an odd thing that I find is that we tire of community. Maybe an overused word. I'm going to use it some today. It's a fitting word for this lesson. We tire of community sometimes, and at the same time, we fear loneliness. Both of those same like common issues for us, for people. People always talk about introverts, extroverts. Being with people might just put a strain on you. Even when it's going well, right? I can be with people and love being with people and say I love these people and just I'm tired. Cynicism is part of the problem, maybe. You're inclined to see religious leaders as having ulterior motives. You're inclined to see churchgoers as ignorant, you know, sheeple, or just maintaining the status quo. You don't want to be a part of that. And maybe related to both those or other issues, there can be scars. Maybe you've been affected by bad experiences. I felt like it was so sad that as I read this Psalm 122, that I would keep on thinking of, this one person would come into my mind from my memory and from childhood. I guess he must have preached a sermon on it or something. I don't know, but for some reason I always think of this guy's face, and he's not a person that I see as representing godliness and consistency and faith, and so it's like he ruined this psalm for me. That when I hear someone saying, I was glad when they said go to the house of the Lord, I hear him saying, you should be happy to be here and listen to me preach. And when he wasn't really, I felt like, as faithful as he ought to be. So I've got this bad taste in my mouth when I hear those words. It's less so now that I've spent time just dwelling on the psalm alone. People can have that. It's associations with God's people, with religion, with Christianity, with all this that just get them a bad taste in their mouth that makes it a hurdle to get over to love again, to be with God's people. And that's what this psalm is doing. Ephesians 5 talks about teaching each other with our psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs. Psalm 122 teaches us to teach each other. Let's go to the house of the Lord and to be glad in doing so. Loneliness is probably a problem of all across all time. It seems like a problem that people are very aware of today. in a world where people are grasping for opportunity to experience entertainment and friendship and community and even sexual intimacy through screens. In a world where we're trying to connect with people through screens, we are so lonely. Even more so than if we didn't have those things to connect us. You see the joy and the relationships that other people have that you don't. You see the people expressing all their views and identity that is theirs and not yours. And you feel even more alone. And you know that whatever feelings of connectedness that you're getting are just not the same. There's a hymn, I forget the title right now, but it has this line, "There's nothing worse than being alone." Some of you know the title of that. And I remember as an introvert, I remember thinking about that song in the past and thinking like, I don't feel that. It's kind of nice. I think, oh man, his name is hitting me now. It's not my notes, but the guy who preached Wednesday talked about that. Thank you, John Morgan. Talked about, this is a side note and I shouldn't do that. What did he talk about? Yeah, I can't remember the connection now. Nothing worse than being alone. Oh yeah, he talked about he likes being alone. That's right, he's an introvert. That's right, he talked about that. Boy. But when you really, really get to know Scripture, you know that God made us to know him and to be in a world full of other people, to be with other people. So people are lonely, and then at the same time, the communities they do have are broken. So I was talking to someone recently who was walked away from Christian fellowship and was with non-Christians, and he found that he couldn't find anything like what he had. And he missed it. Sometimes people just have no concept of what real family and community is supposed to be. Just like talking about God as Father, and they've had a bad experience with their father, and that doesn't... it's not helpful to them. Well, talking about, well, we're a family, and sometimes that doesn't appeal to people because they've only seen that broken. So whether it's their family or friend group or their church, they have seen it broken. And they need, whether they know it or not, whether they know that they need it or not, they need that community. Again, that's God's ideal, and it's the ultimate plan, that we are in fellowship with his people, as we are in fellowship with him. So, how can this psalm become our own? And the sentiments that are richly displayed in that hymn that we'll sing at the end as well, how can we make that our own and grow in acting on that zeal for God's kingdom? There's some things that are noted in the psalm, that are celebrated in the psalm, that can help us to appreciate this. Because you can't just tell someone, just be excited, okay? You can't just say, you don't feel excited about the kingdom, well, be excited about the kingdom. It doesn't work that way. He gives us a sense of why he's so excited about going to the house of the Lord and being with God's people. The most foundational thing is somewhat in the backdrop of this psalm. It's understood is that it's all about God's presence. Going to the house of the Lord. Again, they had that literal building, the temple, that was saying, God is dwelling with you. It's all about God's presence, first and foremost. God is with us. And that's true. That's true for us. And that's what the scriptures are doing when they say that the church is the temple. And using that imagery, God is with us. And not just here when we're here, but he's with his people. Verse 3 there in Psalm 122. Jerusalem built as a city that is bound firmly together. Sometimes there's verbs that are passive that you don't always stop and think, well, who's like the understood object of that? I mean, a lot of people built Jerusalem, but who gave them Jerusalem? Who gave them the temple? Because God is the basis of that. Psalm 127, another psalm of ascents, verse 1 says, "Unless the Lord builds the house, those who build it labor in vain. Unless the Lord watches over the city, the watchman stays awake in vain." The city of Jerusalem is largely the topic of these psalms here. It's built by God. And it's watched over by God. And that's what's so wonderful here. They were not to love the city for its own sake. Okay. There are times they did that. The disciples in Jesus' day said, "Look at these beautiful buildings." But Jesus was pointing them to the rot of the people there and the judgment that would come on that city. So that was wrong. They shouldn't love the city, the buildings. They shouldn't love the temple for their own sake. They shouldn't even love the people just on their own. They need to love God and his presence. That's what it was all about. And the love for the people of God isn't based on the merits of these other people, but because of the Spirit of God who dwells in them. That's why we're so excited to be with each other. 1 Corinthians 3 and 1 Corinthians 6 both talk about ourselves. I have to refer to a lot of passages because I had to cut out. I was getting too much. But 1 Corinthians 3 and 1 Corinthians 6 are both passages that talk about us as a temple of God. But 1 Corinthians 3 talks about the church as a temple with the Spirit dwelling in us. And 1 Corinthians 6 talks about the body, your body, as a temple of God dwelling in you. And that's what we are. When we look at each other, that's what we see. We see the temple of God. We see that God is dwelling in these people. And when we really believe that, you don't have to be told to be excited about that. The second thing I want to highlight is that there's peace and reconciliation, fellowship, the healing and joining of these relationships. While your hope and joy are not rooted in the other people, your hope and joy are in Christ. If Jesus, though, really rules on his throne, he has a kingdom over which he's reigning. And if he's really a shepherd, he's got a flock that he's leading. And so our love and adoration for God and who he is helps us to recognize the people that he's redeemed and that we get to be a part of. You are not a flock of one. So verse 4, to which the tribes go up, the tribes of the Lord, as was decreed for Israel to give thanks to the name of the Lord. And we've referenced some of these in showing some of the background of these Psalms of Ascents, but they were taught in the law to come together for these feast days. It was decreed, and God had chosen Jerusalem for his dwelling place. And so they would come together. Plural, tribes coming together to Jerusalem. The unity we have with God is what brings unity with each other. Sometimes people talk about vertical relationship and horizontal. we're connected to each other because we're coming to worship the Lord. It's not like they had five different temples to go to, five different locations. They didn't. I don't suppose they had a contemporary and a traditional service. You know, they came together. And that unity means that if we're truly seeking the Lord, then that overcomes the obstacles that might separate us. 1 Kings 12, I think, is a vivid account that helps us appreciate this principle. 1 Kings 12. I'm going to read verses 26 through 29. This is, the kingdom has been divided. Right, so David was over the United Kingdom, and then Solomon after him. But Solomon was oppressive, and there was this rebellion, and it was unfaithful. And so Rehoboam, his son, gets some of the tribes, mainly Judah, and Jeroboam, a servant of Solomon, is given the majority of the tribes in the northern kingdom. So that's the context here. They're divided. Right, so Israel's been cut in two here. So let's read 1 Kings 12, verse 26 through 29. Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, an Ephraimite of Zeredah, a servant of Solomon, whose mother's name was Zeruah, a widow, also lifted up his hand against the king. I'm in the wrong chapter. Someone just not going to just tell me that? Well, let me figure it out. It's like, wow, I've backed up more than I realized. Verse 26 of chapter 12. And Jeroboam said in his heart, Now the kingdom will turn back to the house of David. If this people go up to offer sacrifices in the temple of the Lord at Jerusalem, then the heart of this people will turn again to their Lord, to Rehoboam, king of Judah, and they will kill me and return to Rehoboam, king of Judah. So the king took counsel and made two calves of gold. And he said to the people, "You have gone up to Jerusalem long enough. Behold your gods, O Israel, who brought you up out of the land of Egypt." And he set one in Bethel, and the other he put in Dan. And that is there for the rest of the northern tribes' story until they're taken to captivity, having never repented of that and taken on lots of other idolatry along with it. Jeroboam knows, so long as they seek the Lord in that same place, that same time in Jerusalem, I'm not going to be able to maintain my stake of these other tribes. I'm not going to maintain the division. Their hearts will continue to be drawn back to Judah, to Rehoboam, to Jerusalem. So in order to maintain his part of the kingdom, he needs to compromise worship to the Lord. So he makes, it's in his Bible. Golden calves, we've done that before. He even takes the same line as Aaron did. Here's your gods. Translations might vary and say, here's your God. Worship these two golden calves. You know, maybe they were thinking of Yahweh when they bowed before those golden calves. But that clearly goes against some of these important Ten Commandments in order to divide the people. If we divide, if we seek to divide the actual church of God, the only way we're going to be cutting people off is by actually cutting them away from God and compromising our relationship and the relationship of others with God. There is division that obviously just recognizes these people have been cut away from God. They have been worshiping idols, and we are recognizing that and addressing that. But then there's times when these people are worshiping God, and yet we're going to try to put a wedge. But in order to do that, we've got to lift up some idols. We've got to stop pointing the way to the one true God, because that keeps unifying people. We've got to make it about something else in order to win people to our side. Take care that the things that divide you, to the point of saying, these people are not disciples of the Lord, take care that those things are not idols. I understand there's things that might create some practical challenge of working with other Christians. But take care that the gospel, not idols, is what has us declaring that others are cut off from the Lord. If you would go over to 1 Timothy 2. I don't know the last time I referenced this, but I just like this concise instruction that paints this picture of the vertical relationship and the horizontal relationship, that there's a connection between those. 1 Timothy 2, verse 8, Paul says, I desire then that in every place the men should pray, lifting holy hands without anger or quarreling. Right, pray. Like, that's one command. And then don't fight. That's another. But he connects them. Stop fighting with each other. Pray with holy hands. If they're quarreling and fighting with each other against their brethren, are their hands holy? How are they going to raise holy hands before the Lord unless they have sought peace with those who belong to the Lord? And we can overcome disagreements and challenges. We can overcome those things if we really, truly are genuinely both seeking to serve the Lord. And so back in Psalm 122, there's this emphasis on peace for the last several lines. And I know Kurt knew what psalm I was preaching on and sought to align his songs with that. So obviously peace, perfect peace, had that emphasis. Let's read that again in verse 6. Pray for the peace of Jerusalem. May they be secure who love you. Peace be within your walls and security within your towers. For my brothers and companions' sake, I will say peace be within you. For the sake of the house of the Lord our God, I will seek your good. Scott Smelser, I was at a study on the Psalms, which kind of rekindled my excitement for the Psalms back in April. I was at the study in out east, and Scott Smelser, as a kind of personal, as an application and suggestion to our study of the Psalms of Ascents, he said, maybe instead of arguing about who's the reason for us being late on Sunday morning, you know, on the way to the assembly, maybe we should read the Psalms of Ascents. Emily has been doing that for us when she remembers more than I do. Let's do that. Let's take that suggestion. Not to give our children the sense that this is a temple or something, but that we are the temple of God. And we've started reading the Psalms of Ascents as we drive up. They're short. It's 8 minutes to get here, so we can easily fit one in. But when you sing these, the excitement about God's temple and the true adoration for the Lord helps have healthy relationships with each other. We're all loving and seeking the same God, and that's amazing, especially when we feel alone in the world, that we really are people who come together and those barriers are broken down. I want to read Psalm 133. It's one I don't plan on covering all on its own. I could, but I don't plan on it. Psalm 133, verse 1. Behold, how good and pleasant it is when brothers dwell in unity. It is like the precious oil on the head, running down on the beard, of Aaron, running down on the collar of the robes. It is like the dew of Hermon which falls on the mountains of Zion, for there the Lord has commanded blessing, life forevermore. Very relatable imagery there. Verse 1 is what it's all about, right? It's just beautiful when brethren dwell together in unity. It is. And I think the picture of the oil on the beard, I remember mentioning, hey, I do beard oil and it's really soothing. But there's a specific person being mentioned as the one who has oil on his beard, and it's Aaron. And he isn't just any random person. He is the first of the high priests. And oil isn't just a random thing for the high priest. This is how you consecrate priests. And so I have a hard time seeing Aaron in there and oil and thinking it's just, you know, just a picture of soothing oil ointment. But this is this idea that the priesthood unites us with God. But that's not all. But that mediation with God for all of us brings us all together. And the dew of Hermon, the mountain, helps there be precipitation for the people of Israel. But it's just this blessing coming down on all God's people from God. How beautiful it is when brothers and sisters dwell in unity. I find that easy to be excited about when you see it, when you know it. It's wonderful. The third thing I want to note here in Psalm 122 is verse 5. We've got the fact that we have God's presence. That's what's so exciting. We have peace and reconciliation. That's what's so exciting. And then verse 5, there the thrones of judgment were set, the thrones of the house of David. This is the city of David. This is Zion. This is where God has made the promise to David. There's all kinds of wonderful things about being on this side of the cross. But sometimes the distance and time maybe makes some of the symbolism get lost on us, and we don't appreciate it like we could. These people actually traveled out of foreign lands back to their homeland, and where God's king was reigning. We have all those realities more real for us today and to look forward to even more so when Christ returns. But we need to appreciate this. We're here. We're actually here in the city of David. You know, maybe you've been, maybe you love the heritage of American government, and you go to D.C. and you're like, I'm actually here. Like, look at these places where such these honorable figures stood and worked and led. That's what they would feel when they would go back to Jerusalem. And when we come together, we're reminded of who our King is and the justice that he dispenses and the right decisions and the righteous ruling. And that righteousness, as you follow the story of David and the kings that follow, the righteousness of the king then affects the righteousness of the people. I feel like it doesn't have to, right? But that's the way it goes, right? They're led by wicked kings into wickedness again and again and again, and sometimes led by righteous kings into righteousness. And we have to be. We have to be righteous in order to even dwell in this place. There are a couple psalms I was reading recently, not in the Psalms of Ascents, but earlier on, Psalm 24 and Psalm 15, where it talks about, hey, who can dwell in the house of the Lord? Who can ascend the mountain of the Lord? Who can do that? And it goes through and says, well, basically the people who follow the Ten Commandments, that's who. The righteous can. If we're going to be returning and going and gathering with God's people, we need to be righteous. We become righteous people. But of course, is that me? Is that us? Look, who wrote this psalm, Psalm 122? a song of ascents of David. David himself, the king, right? A king against whom all the other kings are compared. He depends on his greater son, Jesus. He depends on his Lord to be even counted righteous. David says in Psalm 32, well, I'll just reference it. Psalm 32, he talks about the fact that it's wonderful to be forgiven. How blessed it is when we're forgiven. David knows that. So the people are not sinless, and yet they're to be righteous. To even dwell in this city, they're to be righteous. And that is, I think, a lot of the challenge of why we have such a hard time saying wholeheartedly, I was glad when they said to me, let us go to the house of the Lord. I love your kingdom, Lord. And it's because this reality, how excited are you to go to Jerusalem when the king has taken the wife of one of his mighty men, Uriah, and he has had Uriah killed, and this has all just come out, and we're supposed to come here to this place? I mean, can you imagine the wreckage that David brought on people being excited to come to Jerusalem? But then we have to look back at ourselves, recognize our own failures. How can we be excited when people are sinning? When they're not righteous? Some say, I love Jesus, but not the church. I love Jesus, but not the church. But the main thing that's being forgotten when we go with that and run with that is that Jesus loves the church. He's going to marry her. Ephesians 5, remember? You know that? Talking about marriage, but not really. Talking about Christ and the church. He loved her and he gave himself for her, and he's cleansing her and to be blameless, washing her with the word. The church is God's bride, is Christ's bride. Now, for this to be excited about this, for this to work, there's a couple things we got to remember here. One, the universal church. We talked about this, I think, about a year ago in a class that Scott was teaching. The universal church, the set of all God's redeemed people, is not identical to any network of churches. Okay? The universal church, the set of God's saved people, is not identical to any network of churches. So notice the flaws and the helpful tendencies of people claiming to be Christians. But understand that God's children aren't numbered in some human directory of churches. Findachurch.com or whatever. God isn't checking that to see who's in and out, okay? God knows who his sheep are. We don't. And when you're disappointed by a certain group of people that loosely represent a tradition of churches, don't assume that the bride of Christ is a lost cause. Does this mean anything to you? SBC? Does that mean anything to you? No. Southern Baptist Convention. It's been shown by their own reporting and some independent stuff that they had, investigation or whatever the term is that they had. It's been shown that they've had a real, another overused word, but systemic problems with sexual abuse. Okay? Literally, they had lists of pastors who were abusing people sexually that they knew about, that there were credible accusations against, and they weren't alerting churches when that pastor would go to the other church and work. And there are people right now in the SBC who are looking at that and saying, the church is a lost cause. And they're done. They're done with the church. But the SBC, and this is easy for us to say, right, isn't the church. But neither is some conglomeration of COCs, brothers and sisters. The Church of Christ tradition, as we happen to sometimes call it. Not all my brethren call it that. They don't have that sign on their buildings. Is not identical to the Bride of Christ. And if there are people who have led Churches of Christ or who are involved with organizations filled with people from Churches of Christ that disappoint you, the church shall stand. So, that's the first thing we got to appreciate. You love the Bride of Christ. You love the church, even though people fall short. And second, Christ isn't done yet. He isn't done yet. His bride is being cleansed. That's the picture in Ephesians 5. You and me, we're being cleansed. We're being sanctified. We are works in progress. But we will be blameless. And we are counted righteous now. And if God counts us righteous and he will sanctify us, what are we to do for each other? So, we can't help but be ecstatically happy to gather with God's people and to look forward to the gathering of God's people for eternity. Once we appreciate that God is at the center of his people, that God brings us together and that God makes us righteous, no one has to tell us to be excited about it. And so embrace it. I love verse 2 because it says what you can't just say in just propositional instruction like in Romans or something. It's this poetic. Our feet have been standing within your gates, O Jerusalem. Some of the families here make trips to Disney. It's like it's a big part of family culture. So you get into those gates and we're actually here. We're actually here. For something so small, so light, we're here. The things that the prophets look forward to, the thing that Christ has built, we're here. We're actually here. And we've begun to experience God's presence through the Holy Spirit who dwells in us. I have a note. If we have time, read Psalm 126. We do not. So go read Psalm 126. It's another one of the Psalms of Ascents that are going to express that excitement. Is that nice that I do that for you? It makes me feel better that I didn't have to delete it. I'm just going to leave it there, maybe. All right. So that's not all, though. It's not just be excited. But just a final takeaway is that he then seeks the good. He seeks peace. He seeks the good of God's people. Go and love the New Jerusalem in action, not just in feeling, but in action. And that's what the community is saying to each other. That's what the psalm is teaching us. Come, let us go. Let's go. But be a part of this. And this isn't just me telling you, but you then going and telling each other, be a part of this. This is exciting. Do you avail yourself of this gift? I regularly, look, I'm preaching a sermon, you're all looking at me, and afterward, and I appreciate it, you're gonna tell me one way or another about the sermon. Y'all are pretty nice, so you give me a lot of grace. So I get a lot of encouragement from you all. But what about the 75 plus others who need to be told, we want you a part of this. Be a part of this. Come, be a part of this. And not just this local congregation, that, yes, but be a part of the kingdom. And so thinking of Christians here and thinking Christians elsewhere, be a part of this. So, I'm going to just read one more passage. There's no brackets around it, so we're reading it. Hebrews 10. And I hope that is a passage that might have a lot of mileage for you, that doesn't take away its power. Hebrews 10. Before I read, I'm just going to put some of these questions before us. How can Christ use you to do more to build others up? Okay, maybe you're thinking of some of those things already. How can you avail yourself of the efforts others are making to build you up? Maybe, unlike me today, maybe you should get to that study people keep telling you about. Maybe I should go visit. Maybe I should make a call. Is there someone who feels alone, maybe? If you feel like maybe this person's falling through the cracks and not being noticed, probably true. So go talk to him. All right, Hebrews 10, 19 through 25, and then we'll stand and sing after that. Therefore, brothers, since we have confidence to enter the holy places by the blood of Jesus, by the new and living way that he opened for us through the curtain that is through his flesh, and since we have a great priest over the house of God, let us draw near with a true heart and full assurance of faith, with our hearts sprinkled clean from an evil conscience and our bodies washed with pure water. Let us hold fast the confession of our hope without wavering, for he who promised is faithful. And let us consider how to stir up one another to love and good works, not neglecting to meet together, as is the habit of some, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day drawing near. Let's stand and sing.